Hello and welcome to The Outer Frame, the show where we talk about movies that aren't talked about enough. I'm your host, Jason Sellers, and on today's episode, we will be discussing David Cronenberg's 2007 mob classic, Eastern Promises, as well as speculating on what the now-dead sequel might have been about. But first, let me introduce the person with the most stars that I know, and also making his triumphant return to the podcast, Donnie Nelson.
I have many stars. You'll never see them.
You have more than I do. That is for sure.
Yikes. I don't even know what that means.
I don't either. Fourth cool. of July. America!
Ah! I do not have 50 stars on me, sorry.
Aw, do you have 13 stripes?
Yes, actually.
Could you have 50 stars on you?
Yes.
Alright. Well, that's something I'd like to see. Just like, gross. Just like Viggo Mortensen's dick, which I saw in this movie.
Oh, trust me, when we finally convert this into not just an audio podcast, but also start doing video, then you'll start seeing a lot more of me leaning just off camera to speak into my microphone.
Yep. All right. Well, it's been a while. We weren't on the show last
week.
I know.
I've been gone for a long time. I was on my sabbatical.
Yeah. You took a... It felt like you were gone for years.
Years and years.
And now you're back.
Years.
And I don't know that the show will ever quite be the same.
Obviously not. It's always changing. I have not listened because you recorded with Caitlin and a mystery guest?
Yes, a mystery guest.
Okay, did you stay with the same format as we are doing now that we have just changed to?
Yes, I also acknowledged that we already messed up our show because after 1 week of having a catchphrase, we talked about an extremely popular movie.
Oh, yeah, well, you know what? It's fine.
Yeah, it is.
It's fine. It's okay. I'm all about saying something and doing the opposite anyway. So that's just my brand.
That's life.
That's life.
Donnie.
All right. What?
What is the worst thing that you've seen recently?
The worst thing that I have seen recently...
Was it Source Code? Have you finally watched Source Code?
I have not watched Source Code yet.
Damn it, Donnie!
But let me tell you about... Donnie Darko. I hate that movie. No... It's okay. It's just not as good as people think. And also, it's... Southland Tales is better. Okay, let's move on. I did not actually watch Donnie Darko. However, I will recommend that people go see Southland Tales because it is maybe not a good movie, but a very interesting movie to watch.
I mean, there's that one scene of Kevin Smith in a wheelchair, so that's something.
Yeah, I know. And that, like, ultimately taints it for the rest of its existence. But you got Justin Timberlake singing The Killers, which is fine. That's memorable. It's stuck in my head. But to be honest, you don't want to know what I've watched.
All right, then.
You don't want to know.
I have not watched Donnie Darko in a long time, and I have only watched Southland Tales once, I think.
That's enough.
And literally the only thing I remember about it is Kevin Smith being in it. So, I don't know. Maybe someday I'll give it another go.
So, I cannot say that I've watched anything that is the worst thing, because anything I get to watch nowadays is a good thing.
All right.
I'll just put it that way.
Well, the worst thing that I watched recently, I decided to give a movie that I don't like another go, only to find that I still don't like it, and it's not very good, and that there is a much better version of this movie out there called Mayhem, But the movie that I tried to give another go at is The Belko Experiment.
Mm-hmm. I have seen this movie.
Yeah, that movie is just not good.
No, it's very... considering that we just watched Brightburn not that long ago, and talking about James Gunn productions that do not actually directly involve James Gunn, it is very stilted, it has issues, and as best as the cast can do, it still cannot save that movie.
Yeah. No, it... I also feel like it's kind of a cop-out that there's a group of them that have access to guns. Mm-hmm. Like, it's pretty fucking stupid. I think.
Yeah. Be like, oh, the best way that we're going to be able to settle this in a civilized way is by making sure that only select people have the use of guns. Like, no, that's not how that's going to go.
It would be like...
just a lot of questionable things.
It would be like if they took a battle royale and instead of having it be an entire class of high school kids, they just picked one random kid from each town and they all had specialized training in the weapon that they were going to take with them and, you know, survival training on how to get there from like a mentor who had survived a past battle royale. The Hunger Games is fucking stupid.
I will not disagree with you there.
For anyone who doesn't get my shitty, shitty metaphor.
Although, honestly, Battle Royale is just as much of a sinner as the aforementioned Hunger Games just because of its sequel being so bad. But Battle Royale is still the peak of the whole genre. I think the namesake is still the best.
Okay, so to actually talk about the Belko Experiment, I mean, it's a movie with a really stupid premise, which is that there's office workers trapped in a building, and they all have to kill each other. And honestly, like, it sounds like that should be kind of enjoyable to watch, because you've got a somewhat parody on office culture, and you've got horror movie elements, and instead you just kind of get this really shitty horror movie that tries to make a point about something, but it doesn't really have anything interesting to say. So
yeah, and it's not really outrageous, because the whole point of James Gunn, because he's able to ride a fine line from, like, when he was still in his trauma days, mm-hmm. when he was under, you know, like, because the whole, all trauma did was just, like, this outrageous stuff, like, The Toxic Avenger and Romeo and Juliet and all mm-hmm. those ridiculous movies. And the whole thing that has made James Gunn stick out is that he's able to take these, like, pretty well-worn premises and, like, inject enough of that weirdness in there to still make it grounded, so people still say, like, oh yeah, James Gunn is weird, but he's still, like, relatable.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that's missing from this movie, is that there's just not enough weird there. It's like mm-hmm. it's cut and dry.
Yeah, it's a pretty straightforward movie with a pretty stupid premise.
Mm-hmm. And I don't remember the ending being very good.
No. Because, you know what? I don't care. Spoilers for Belko Experiment.
Don't watch it.
Yeah, just don't watch it. If you do watch it, just watch Mayhem, because it's much better. It ends with the guy, like the hero, walking out of the building, only to reveal that he's part of, like, a bunch of other buildings nearby that have been killing each other. And he's got they're setting it up that he has to go kill them now. I don't know. It was stupid.
Extended universe. Terrible.
So, what's the best thing that you've seen recently?
The best thing I've seen recently... I'm just going to say I'm talking about just one movie. And it was a movie that I had not brought up, I don't think, before. And it is... And I'm sorry... to all of our listeners, I'm going to bring up anime, because I watched the Dragon Ball Z, I think they just call it, let's just say Dragon Ball Z, but it's the new movie Broly, Legendary Super Saiyan Broly, the newest one, because there's already been various Legendary Super Saiyan Broly films, at least two other ones.
So, and what did you think? Because my brother has been obsessed with that movie.
It's fine. It's not something, like, it's Dragon Ball. Like, mm-hmm. it's the appeal of, like, the newer show, Dragon Ball Super, and also these movies, which the two movies before this were pretty much just, like, movie form arcs of the series of Dragon Ball Super. And then this one isn't actually in the show Dragon Ball Super. So this is actually like a whole cloth thing. They can just do what they want. Because mm-hmm. it's pretty much just a side story. But the whole appeal of, like I said, that show and these movies is that you're getting Dragon Ball Z in, like, new animation. You're finally getting, like, decent animation. Because some of the movies are good. The show Dragon Ball Z, like, definitely had crunch periods where, like, the fighting was not very good, and even in, like, American edits of that show, like, there would be, like, 9 episodes of them either powering up or, like, you seeing the same 3 moves in a fight over and over.
Yeah.
And I want to say that this is, like, if you're looking for just straight-up Dragon Ball action, like, anime-ass fighting, then this is what you got. This is going to satisfy that. And honestly, some of the writing is pretty good, too. Plays into the fact that Goku is a piece of garbage, and also that Vegeta is actually, like, the best character in that show. So, but like I said, I'm sorry to everybody listening out there who actually likes film, and I'm talking about anime, but that's just how it's going to go this week. And you can't... I had my time to speak. It was enjoyable from what I watched, but, like, it's not something I'll ever go back to. It was like fast food, you know. you watch it, you enjoy it, but then once you're after done consuming it, then you just kind of feel bad.
You feel dirty.
Feel dirty, yeah.
All right, well, the best thing that I have seen recently is something that I have been trying to watch for quite a while, and that is The Long Dumb Road, which stars Jason Mantzoukas and Tony... I don't know what his last name is exactly, so I'm just going to call him Tony Ravioli, which is pretty close to what his actual name is.
Oh, I'm sure Jason Mantzoukas has probably made the same joke.
I think it's actually Revel... I don't know. You know what? I'm just going to stop. I'm going to call him Tony Ravioli. And it is a movie that... I mean, it's a road trip movie where Tony Ravioli's character is... Which he plays Flash in Spider-Man Homecoming and Spider-Man Far From Home.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yep. And Jason Mantzoukas, who is... Rafi on the League or the TikTok man in John Wick 3 Parabellum.
I know, you're so... Do you have that poster yet of just him?
Someday I'll get it and I'll cover my house
TikTok,
with it.
TikTok, Mr. Wick. That scene was made me so much more happier than I was expecting from that movie, just to interject.
No, same. That was definitely a highlight of the movie. Anyway, The Long Dumb Road is... Tony Ravioli's character is driving to college, and he's lived kind of a sheltered life, and then on his way to college, his van breaks down, and he meets Jason Mantzoukas' character, who is kind of like a fringe... He's like a more toned-down version of Rafi from The League. Like, he's just like a crazy fringe-living dude. And he happens to be an auto mechanic and offers to fix the van in exchange for a ride. And so the movie is just kind of them driving around. and, you know, I was expecting, just based on the trailer, I was expecting kind of the typical road trip comedy that I have not really enjoyed ever since I've seen a road trip comedy. I mean, outside of, like, the Blues Brothers. And, you know, they're kind of all the same now. You know, it's high school kids or college kids. They drive somewhere. There's boobs. There's drugs and alcohol and ridiculousness. And this one was a lot different. And in the sense that it felt more restrained. And because it was more restrained, the characters felt more real. And a lot of the humor and a lot of the story comes from just the interactions of the two characters with each other and how they kind of both like and detest each other. And how Tony Ravioli, his struggle with the fact that he's lived kind of a sheltered life, and so he doesn't like Jason Mantzoukas' character, but he's also incredibly envious because this guy, as he puts it at one point in the movie, like this guy is like America to him, like it's just unexplored. And he's done all this stuff, and I don't know, it's really, really interesting, and I don't feel like I'm doing it any favors the way that I'm describing it. But I really, really enjoyed it, and I don't just say that as a huge fan of Jason Mantzoukas. I was actually going into it expecting it to be not up to the bar that I had set. And I really enjoyed it. It's not streaming, but it's on Redbox. I think it's on VOD if you want to check it out that way. But I highly recommend people track it down just because it is a different movie. And it's also got, for the type of film that it is, it strangely has a lot of jokes about how much women enjoy oral sex. Okay. So there's that.
Okay.
One of my favorite lines in the movie, or parts of the movie, is when Jason Mantzoukas asks Tony Ravioli if he goes down on his, or if he ever went down on his ex-girlfriend, and his response is, "No, she didn't really like it that, or she doesn't really like that much." To which Jason Mantzoukas says, "No, everyone likes having someone go down on them. She just doesn't like having you go down on her because you're not that good at it." So that's the kind of, that's just a quick example of the kind of humor that's in the movie. Also, Ron Livingston has like a quick bit in it. He's in it for like a scene or two, which is kind of fun. He's also playing a very not Ron Livingston type character.
Good, good.
And being also a fan of Ron Livingston, that
he's
also
just, he's just a good guy. He's way too charming for his own good.
That also makes the movie worth watching. So, yeah, those are the two things that I watched. Why don't we get into, or two of the things I watched, anyway. Why don't we get into Eastern Promises?
Yeah, boy.
So, the first thing that I want to bring up is that this is the second of a trilogy.
So to speak.
Yeah.
Not between, literal.
I mean, it's the same as, like, the what is it, the Hard Working Man or Everyday Working Man trilogy with Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly, or the Blood and Ice Cream trilogy.
Cornetto.
Yep.
The Cornetto trilogy thing. Well, yeah, it was always referred to that. But, like, each one of the cut... Never mind. Let's go. No reason for this. Sorry. I'm going to stop my tangent before I start it.
So there's three movies that were made by David Cronenberg and Viggo Mortensen. And they all starred Viggo Mortensen.
Starting with A History of Violence.
Yes.
Correct. And then this movie, and which is Eastern Promises.
And then A Dangerous Method.
Correct.
Which also starred Michael Fassbender. And I think Keira Knightley?
Yes, Keira Knightley was the woman between them.
Yep. So, real quick, have you seen all three of them?
I've only seen the first two. I never got to A Dangerous Method.
All right.
But I haven't seen a history of violence for a very long time, but I do remember, like, I don't know if, like, enjoy is the best word to use for that film, but, like, I respect what it's doing a lot. This one is a but that still has, like, that still has a lot of, like, Cronenberg's, like, very, like, if you're not into him, like, you're in for a rude awakening for what you're gonna get from that film, because it goes places that you probably don't, you're not used to, and if you're squeamish, then you probably, but, like, this movie is toned back. I would say this is probably, not seeing A Dangerous Method, probably the most, like, commercial film out of the three.
Yeah.
Because it's the way that I've always described it is it's Godfather as, you know, by way of Cronenberg.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I was just gonna say I think we should do a history of violence for this show because you know what, we should just do all three of them. I mean, they're all,
that movie is just so weird and just like apathetic to the audience liking any of the characters in that film.
I mean all three of them are really good, and Even the A Dangerous Method, which I would say is easily the worst out of the three, is still really good and really interesting.
Yeah.
And also, I don't know if you've heard this, but apparently Viggo Mortensen considers A History of Violence to be the most perfect movie that he's ever been in. So that's something interesting. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Eastern Promises.
Dang, just makes me want to watch that movie again.
One other thing, real quick. Yeah, right? We should just do that soon. All right, so real quick, one other thing that I found interesting was that when they were screening this film, David Cronenberg had asked people that were attending the screenings to write whatever they wanted about it as long as they didn't give the plot away.
Right.
And I thought that was really interesting.
Because wow, Roger Ebert even said, like, I noticed I was reading up, and, like, he even said, he was like, yeah, I agree. So, like, the person of all film criticism before he sadly passed away it was very much on board with that.
Yeah. And, I think I can safely say that we're both fans of this movie.
Mm-hmm. I like it a fair bit.
Yeah, so... that being said, we're just going to get right into spoiler stuff. This movie came out over 10 years ago. If
in
you
the
haven't
magical
seen it,
film year of 2007,
yep.
It has been 12 years at this point, or if not 12 years, very close to it.
Best year for film ever.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we can talk about that a little bit later. One of the I remember watching this when it first came out and being so excited for it because real quick, Eastern Promises is about there's a girl, she's 14, and she dies during childbirth. Mm-hmm. and they don't have anything to go by about her except for her diary.
Mm-hmm.
And so one
and
part of
yep. And that the girl that she gives birth to lives.
Yep. And the little girl she gives birth to lives. So one part of the movie is Naomi Watts trying to track down and figure out what happened and why this girl died and why she was pregnant and all this stuff. And how she got here, just blah, 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 blah. There's a lot of how. And then on the other side of the movie, we have Vincent Cassell and Viggo Mortensen, who are both members of the Mafia, or the Russian Mafia, and who work...
In London,
yep.
Mm-hmm.
And who work for Vincent Cassell's father, doing various things. It seems like Vincent Cassell mostly makes his career just, like, fucking up in this movie. And Viggo Mortensen makes his money disposing of dead bodies and punishing Vincent Cassell for being stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's the two stories cross and you find out how they're entwined and all that stuff. So one of the only thing that I knew about this movie when I went to watch it that made me excited to watch it is that the clip they played for Viggo Mortensen got nominated for an Oscar for this movie, and I remember had never heard of it before, and then his little Oscar clip, because you know they play a clip from each movie when they're like, this person for this movie, they show
Viggo
like
Mortensen
a little
yeah. For Eastern Promises.
And they play a clip from him from the movie, and the clip they played is the clip of him cutting the fingers off of the dead body.
So weird sometimes, the choices they
yeah,
make.
Right? And I was like, oh my god, I don't know what this is, but I want to watch it. And so I tracked down a copy and I watched it, and this is, and all I remember thinking, now bear in mind, you know, I was like 18 when I watched this, but I was like, oh my god, this is really boring. Like, this is not at all the movie that I thought it was going to be. I was expecting a lot more finger chopping off than there is.
Yeah. Well, also, I was very surprised because, like, I had this suspicion when I went back in to rewatch it, but, like, this is not an action movie. Mm-mm. Whatsoever, albeit the most marketable scene that they kept on throwing at, like, every publication and everything I read before. It was just, like, this intense scene of Viggo Mortensen's character in a bathhouse, and he's naked, and he's fighting, like, these two guys, these two thugs that come in.
And his dick is just flopping around.
Bloop, 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 bloop. You know, many jokes made about Viggo Mortensen's manhood by the end of the year when people were deciding what the best film of the year was. But, like, it's really just the characters. Like, the plot is super simple,
mm-hmm.
and it really just... all the weight was on the actors, and the actors needed to play their parts as well as they could have, and I think I don't think there's a weak person in all of it. And everything kind of goes very smoothly when it comes to that aspect of this film. And also, they don't, I feel like they avoid some of the tropes of, like, other mafia films or other gangster films where they don't really... There's, you know, there's a scene in a barbershop where there's a guy who gets a hit on him and he gets his, like, his throat slit.
Yep.
And then there's, you know, the scene where Viggo Mortensen's cleaning it up, and then there's the attack in the bathhouse. But, like, really, this is not, like, that violent of a movie.
Yeah,
it's really
no,
about
it's not.
Just like these the person of like pure evil who knows exactly how to play everything, and then the person who like is pure good, Naomi Watts' character, and then Viggo Mortensen's character who is like right in the middle and like trying to balance all this out.
I was thinking about it beforehand, and I feel like this is, I mean, at its core, this is a mystery. And I feel like it uses the mob as a way to be like, or I feel like David Cronenberg is being like, oh, you think the mob is cool? Well, check this out. They're not. they're all really, really fucking shitty. And, and I think that's one of the things that makes it so interesting is because there's so many movies that glorify the mafia. And don't get me wrong, like, I'm a huge fan of Goodfellas. I'm a huge fan of the Godfather movies. Well, the first two, anyway. I mean, one of my top 10 favorite movies is Animal Kingdom. I really, really like movies showing or that depict the mob. And this one was interesting because instead of, you know, showing us those tropes like you talked about, it gives us similar characters and similar experiences while showing us through Naomi Watts' eyes and allowing us to see, like, oh man, these people are not good. It's kind of like, you know, an example that I would just briefly use and then we can move on. And I don't even know if this is a good example, but you know, when we talk about like, last year, Revenge was one of my top favorite movies of the year, and I said this feels like a movie where it's like, oh, you want to see a revenge movie? We're going to give you a fucking revenge movie. I feel like that's how this feels, where it's like, oh, you want to see a movie about how cool the mafia is? All right, we'll show you a movie about how cool the mafia is. And so that was something that I really appreciated about it, and I think helps it stand out amongst a lot of, I don't know, lesser mob movies, and even a lot of the better ones. If that makes any sense at all.
Yes, it is the mob aspect to it, the fact that, you know, it all centers around this mob, and specifically the godfather, as it was, or the boss of the family in London, the Russian mob, and his son, Viggo Mortensen's character, being the bodyguard of the son.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's all, it's incidental. Mm-hmm. Essentially how these pretty much just these four characters interact with each other.
Mm-hmm.
How, you know, the boss is taking advantage of Naomi Watts's character, of her just being good-willed and thinking there's just not bad people out there, or like everybody has good intentions and has all their intentions on the front. And then you have the dynamics between Viggo Mortensen and Vincent Cassell's character.
Mm-hmm.
Which is I could see this as like a play, because there's only four characters, and like there's just like very few scenes between how these characters interact, and it's just really interesting that like there is a very natural build up throughout the movie about how these characters have interacted with each other, how the nature of the relationship changes throughout the film.
Mm-hmm.
and how things eventually, you know, end at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And that they just give you so much breathing room. And although I would say that some of the characters, they do speak pretty plainly at yep. times, and it almost feels like it's exposition, but I feel like that's just kind of how they would talk to each other. Like, yeah. I don't actually feel like the characters, or like Cronenberg himself is like, he's not disrespecting the audience. He's just like, hey, I'm just going to show these characters talking to each other for like an hour and 40 minutes, and you're just going to know them, and you're going to watch this story unfold. And you can kind of make up your own mind about these people.
Well, and one of the great parts of that is that at no point do they sit down and go, all right, well, Anna was raped by, what's his name, Simon? Simon. Simon. Anna was raped by Simon, and he raped her because his son would not rape her. And
Anna is the Naomi Watts character. Yep. Tatiana is the girl.
Oh, sorry, my bad. Tatiana. And like at no
Although
point
close.
At no point do they sit down and just like break down all this stuff. It's a long slow reveal. And
right.
I think
it's
it works
not
really well.
Yeah, like, but also, like, the audience has, like, the full picture way mm-hmm. before any of the characters do,
mm-hmm.
which is, if you're gonna go that, well, except for the one twist, like, two-thirds of the way through the movie with Viggo Mortensen's character, like, you pretty much know everything that's going on at mm-hmm. all times, and everything, nothing is, like, snapped to without a natural progression to that event in the film. It's just, like, I think the pacing in this film is just really good.
Mm-hmm. And well, one of the other things that I thought was really cool that like I hadn't seen, or that I don't really think we get to see, the element of the tattoos and their symbolism.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was really interesting in the way that they, you know, the stars and how, you know, it means oh you're not gonna bow before anyone ever.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that, you know, you should be able to look at a person and see their entire life tattooed on their body. I thought that mm-hmm. was really fascinating. I also I read somewhere that Viggo Mortensen's character has two tattoos on his arms, and One of them says something like, one of them says something like, "What are you doing here?" And the other arm says something like, "Where the fuck am I supposed to go?" Or something like that. Which I thought was really funny.
I do not remember that at all.
No, that that's very funny. That's not in the movie. It's in Russian, and somebody translated it.
Where was it on his body?
I think it was on his arms. It was either on his arms or it was on his chest. Okay. But I don't remember. And I mean, it says it in Russian, so like, there's no way you, unless you can read Russian.
Yeah.
I cannot. So.
Of course I can. No, I can't. But also, that seems like people who know Russian, no one could read that. Mm-hmm. I think that still probably fits with his character, mm-hmm. honestly.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, this movie's really freaking good. Like,
yeah, it's just pleasant to watch, even though, like, most of the people in the film are not very pleasant characters. It's just fun to see them go through the motions of who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's probably the best thing. It almost reminds me of Jackie Brown in that way, is that you already know, like, all these characters are just characters who live outside of the confines of this film, mm-hmm. and you're just seeing a little snippet of their life, like, but you're just seeing them go through this this event in their lives, but they are, it doesn't interfere with who they are as characters. Mm-hmm. And you completely get who that character is throughout the entire film.
Mm-hmm.
Like, none of it seems unnatural. And, like, that's the whole... Like, I just watched it now for the first time in, I don't know, I would say, like, 3 years. And now I'm wondering why I didn't watch it any sooner. Because, like, I want to keep on going back and, like, watching these people do what they do.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just, you know... There's respect for the art of acting, and I think the movie is a little bit plain shot. It's not a bad looking film by any means, and I've definitely seen other mob movies that kind of have this similar look, because London is very drab, and they show that very well. It's wow, my mind just completely went off the rails there. But I suppose the point I'm getting at is that this is... It's something that I wouldn't mind going back to and just having in the background, because there's so many good character moments in it that are not like, oh, I'm watching this for the story anymore. It's like, no, I'm watching it for this one scene between Naomi Watts and Viggo Mortensen's character that's like a third of the way through the film, or like just this nice exchange of them being like, be like, oh, you have a nice bike, and like just that little sub, you know, that little thing on the side where he's just like, oh, I like your bike, and he's just like, and then later be like, oh, I think there's water in it, and she's like, oh, you think, and he's like, oh, sarcasm, huh, and he's like, I see, and then he fixes her bike, and then he brings it back to her, and it's all kind of like, it's a genuine moment in the film.
I feel like, you know, with a lot of movies of this type, it's something that you go to watch for the action set pieces, and something like this, it's about the character set pieces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're not waiting for, like, the Goodfellas, like, montage of hits and stuff like that, mm-hmm. or, you know, that typical thing. I'm not saying anything bad about Scorsese, but he definitely made his stamp that a lot of people tried to copy, and if you watch a lot of mafia films, it's just it feels like you're seeing the same thing over and over again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. So, is there I know that for me, one of the things that I was kind of bummed about that I don't really remember. I really wish that they hadn't done the seemingly, I don't know, weird romantic subplot between Naomi Watts and Viggo Mortensen.
You wish they had done it?
Had not?
Well... Yeah,
and I know that, like, it's only vaguely hinted at, but even that final kiss at the end, I could have done without. Maybe I'm being a little too nitpicky, but when I tried to think of the only things I don't like about this movie, that was like one of the only things I could think of.
I would say, because the hilarious thing is that I don't know if this does it on a bunch of Blu-ray players, but I watch all my Blu-rays on my PS4.
Same.
And on the PS4, there is just like a stock. There's like a photo, like, and then a disc, like, yep, a photo above the disc, and it shows you what movie you have in. And the picture is that. It's of Viggo Mortensen kissing Naomi Watts' character with the baby. And I was just like, that's so fucking weird. And then, of course, like, you see this stuff, and Universal is, like, is very uniform in how they present their Blu-rays. So you boot up the Blu-ray, and then, like, they just show montage of scenes from the movie. Doesn't matter, like, where in the movie. It could be, like, the very last scene. You're just like, why did you do this? Don't show the movie. Just like, well, there's various movies. I'm not going to point out, like, the worst offenders lately. However, I suppose the point I'm getting at is that, like, I remembered that before I started watching the movie. Mm-hmm. And so I had, like, the whole movie up to that point to think about what that kiss meant. And I think, I don't think of it as a criticism. Like, mm-hmm. I don't have a problem with it, because the way that it looks is that, like, he's making the decision to, like, continue on playing this role that he's not. Like, he doesn't want to do this, but he does this because he knows how he can get... He's in through the door, as he tells, because he's an undercover agent from FSB, who is, mm-hmm. like, the Russian, like, federal, you know, FBI. And so, like, he's in through the door, and so he's just like, oh, this is the one time I think I've had a genuine experience with somebody, and I'm probably never going to see this person. And he even says goodbye to her, and he's just like, I'm not going to, like, before I leave or never see this person again, I'm going to see for a brief moment what life could be, and then he's going to... That might make it easier for his character to move on and play that role again. Just dive mm-hmm. back into just being, like, depressed all the time or having to repress. And that's why I don't have a problem with it. But I can kind of see where you're coming from. That, like, they kind of have this back and forth throughout the entire movie, but you never... It never seems like it's...
It never culminates
that kind of something. Yes.
The big heart. Mm-hmm. Real quick, I love the idea of, like, somebody watching this, leaving it in their PlayStation, and then somebody else turning it on and being like, oh, this looks like a cute rom-com, and hitting play and then, you know, seeing...
What is this?
The fuck is wrong with you? Why would you watch this? That seems really funny to me. So, you know, we've been gushing all over this movie, and I guess one of the biggest questions I have, and I mean, I think I know the answer, but, like, why does this film get forgotten? Because I rarely hear people talk about it. I hear people talk more about the other two, A History of Violence and A Dangerous Method, than I do this movie.
All right.
And, I mean, I think I know the answer, which is that it came out in 2007...
Within the sea of wonderful films that came out that year.
Yeah, which include, like, just two of the greatest movies of all time being No Country for Old Men and There Will Be Blood.
Mm-hmm. Both have a similar nihilistic tone to them.
Mm-hmm. And both are absolutely jaw-dropping, not draw-dropping.
Mm-hmm.
And both, I don't know, I feel like there's a constant debate, I don't know why, about which one is better. And I feel like for me, it's whichever one I'm watching at the time. Like, that's the one that I like more.
True. You know, that could very well be the case. I could definitely see that being why that this movie doesn't get talked about. Mm-hmm. But also, like, okay, it depends on, like, who, like, how do you get to talking about this film? Like, if you're a David Cronenberg fan, like, you're talking about other stuff before you talk about this film, because it seems like this is his most straight-laced film. Because, like, if you're talking about David Cronenberg, you're talking about, like,
The Fly.
Or you're talking about, you're probably going to A History of Violence because it's more up his wheelhouse than this film. Or you're talking about, you know, Crash or, you know, just his weirder stuff that's a little bit more off the wall. Because some people probably even forget if they come to talk about this film at a different angle that it's not directed by David Cronenberg, then they're probably just thinking it's another generic, like, mafia film.
Yeah.
And, like, it has good casting, but, like, there's not much that on the surface sets it apart. But, like, if it didn't have, like, if it didn't have David Cronenberg's, like, kind of, like, nihilistic, like, underpinnings, then I don't think it would have, like, almost a sympathy for, like, more bizarre characters and not looking down on them as much. Because I feel like he does that well. Like, I think he respects the characters in his film a little bit more than others. And I'm not saying that, like, almost more so than, No Country for Old Men, I would say. But that's only because I haven't seen that movie in a while and I've just watched this movie. But, yeah, it's just kind of, like, at its surface, generic, and you're talking about two other films that were, like, neck and neck with in, like, the Oscars that year, you know? And Eastern Promises wasn't really in that conversation.
Yeah. I did just want to say real quick that... Have you ever actually seen Crash? I mean, obviously the David Cronenberg movie, not the one about racism.
Yes, the one about racism and only racism. Nothing else, because there is nothing else to that film.
That movie is not good.
No,
anyway,
it's not.
Yeah,
and it won.
I know. Yeah, well, you know what? Green Book won, so...
Yeah, wah, wah.
And just because Caitlin is sitting over there, I'm going to interject her silent comment to herself, which is, I like Green Book. Anyway.
I'm sure there's just good performances in that film. I'm not saying there's not. I haven't seen it, so I'm not going to say anything.
She mouthed, I love you to me, so.
Oh, all right. Well,
all right, anyway. So,
rest in peace, Jason.
Have you ever actually seen Crash?
I haven't. I know that James Spader is in it. That's about it.
He is. I have seen Crash. And the other night we were talking with some friends about just like weird fucking movies that we've seen. And I was like, oh my God, have you guys ever seen Crash? And they were like, no, what's it about? And I was like,
you better sit down and buckle up.
I didn't know how to explain it, so I just said, it's a movie about people that want to fuck cars. And then they looked at me with this horrible expression, and I was like, wait, that's not fair. It's a movie about people that want to fuck car crashes. And then they looked even more confused, and I was like,
and you're like, yeah. You apparently, I am not talking to someone who appreciates film the same way as I do, so I'm gonna walk away from this situation.
Yes,
that's the next step to that.
Yep. All right,
anyway, go on.
No, that was my funny Crash thing I wanted to mention. So the wrap up question: if they were to do a sequel to this, which David Cronenberg has said that they aren't, but he seems like he really wants to make a sequel to it.
No, and, I mean, I lightly skimmed over this subject, and the reason why, like, they were gonna make it.
Yep, and then the studio said no.
Yeah, he literally called out the one person at Focus who was just like, yeah, we're going to film this October, but I don't know, if you want to talk about it, you can talk to this dude.
Yep.
He's the one that said no.
So, I don't know. I mean, like, I guess it would be cool to see a sequel, but I don't know what it would be about. I mean...
Well, they said that they were, like, apparently, obviously, Vincent Cassell's and Viggo Mortensen's character were going to be involved, and they were going to be in Russia.
Yep.
And that, like, implies some things... Like, I suppose it would probably be more of like, oh, they were able to get away with some of this stuff when they were in London doing this stuff, but then, like, for some reason, there's a big event for the Russian mob that, like, everybody has to, like, gets called home, as it were, and then that would probably be the culmination of Viggo Mortensen's character, like, finally, like, making good on why he went so far undercover and, like, finally bringing some people to justice. So that's what I would imagine. But then again, like, if you're making a sequel to this film, I feel like that would be too conventional. It would be another really small story that they would find themselves in, but in Russia.
And that's what I guess I have a hard time with, is, like, you know, it's a super specific set of circumstances that have brought these characters together. And I feel like trying to do the same or something similar would, I don't know, I think I would, it would just be like, it would have too much of that been there, done that feeling. And I know this is a horrible example, like a horrible comparison, but you know how, like, the Boondock Saints 2 is the exact same movie as the first Boondock Saints?
Almost, like, verbatim in some scenes.
Yeah, same thing with Super Troopers and Super Troopers 2. Yeah. I mean, I guess I just worry that, like, that's kind of what would happen, where it would be like, oh, well, there were these horribly unique circumstances that brought us together in the first movie. Well, it happens again. And
what wouldn't you imagine? It happens again. And that's, there's another character that's just like Willem Dafoe's character from the last movie. It's just a girl now. Oh, they find another dude like Rocco. Yeah, he's just like, but he's Latino now. Whoa, like, shut the fuck up. We have the same three detectives that we had from the last movie. Nothing's changed.
And one of the things.
Can you tell him I'm a little resentful of the second Boondock Saints movie, though I don't actually like it that much?
I fucking hate that movie. I've seen it. I've seen it one time. I didn't want to watch it. I watched it, and I hated. I was just sitting there like mad. I was mad that I had that. Like, my friend was making me watch it, and I was mad that it was so awful. And I was also. I have since really cooled on the first one. But I was also, like, a huge fan of the first one at the time. Mm-hmm. And I was mad that, like, they had taken these two characters that I really liked and turned them into this shitty movie.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm not saying they weren't, like, super... Like, there were likable things about the performances in the first film. And because it was the first film, like, you weren't, like... This was the first time you were seeing something like this. I mean, Norman Reedus would go on to become a huge star.
Of screen video game.
Yep, he's starring in a video game later this year. So, you almost think, like, they can't make these characters as, like, more cartoonish than they were. And then they do.
Be wrong.
You're like, you're not only taking everything that worked with the first film as much as it could have with the audience that it had, and you're just like blowing it up to a degree that doesn't make it good. Or I was gonna like say you couldn't grasp it, of like the reasons why they did with the characters that they did in the second film. Yeah. But like I know exactly why, because he's a hack and he got lucky once.
Yeah. And I just thought of a more apt comparison, which would be Sicario and Sicario Day of the Salado or whatever it is.
Sicario of the Soldado. The Day of the Soldado.
I'm just going to call it Sicario 2.
Okay.
So
it doesn't deserve anything more than the 2.
Sicario is a genius film that, you know, it presents this fascinating world. And then when I heard they were going to do a sequel, I was really bummed. And I still haven't seen it. friend of the show, Josh Smith, has watched it and told me that it's okay if you just pretend that it's not a sequel to Sicario.
Yeah, like, just change the names. And it, because the whole point of that film is that, like, it tries to delve deeper into a character that in the first film, the whole reason why he was interesting in the first place was because you didn't know a lot about him. He was, like, this weird wraith of a character, like this shadow of a man who did work that he has reasons for, but, like, you didn't actually need to have that explained, or because he does something, like, completely irrehensible at the end of that film.
Yep.
So, like, why would I feel sympathetic about that character in a sequel?
Right.
Like, I would maybe see a prequel, but, like, just doing a sequel is... Yeah, I don't have much of an interest in seeing that film either.
Yeah, so I feel like we're getting a little bit far from the discussion.
Let's talk more about Sicario.
And Boondock Saints. Boondock Sicario.
But okay, right, let's explain this.
What?
Let's just say that this whole conversation has not been meaningless, like, weird tangent that we've gone on. This is exactly what we wouldn't want to see, and we think probably would have been with Eastern Promises too. Well,
so here's my wild speculation about what the sequel would have been. It would have been Viggo Mortensen and Vincent Cassell's characters falling in love.
Yeah, which is like not implied, but like Vincent Cassell's character is implied to be
is very very heavily implied to be gay.
Yes,
and. So I think...
And in love with Viggo Mortensen's character.
Yes, who does not appear to not be down with that.
Mm-hmm.
I just made a double negative.
Ha-ha!
So anyway, I think it would be a love story between the two of them. And then Viggo Mortensen is like, ooh, I'm in the FSB, I'm gonna kill you. And then it ends.
That'd be brutal. Just like... Instead of having any kind of, like, small... So you think the whole thing of the sequel would be, like, their relationship, like, disintegrating more than it has?
Yeah.
Because, like, Vincent Cassell's character by the end of that movie is super unstable. Because he goes from, at that last scene, he goes from, like, crying because he doesn't want to kill this baby. and then when they convince him not to kill the baby... Then, like, all of a sudden, he's, like, super happy. He's like, let's party, you know. And it's just like, Jesus, like, how can you switch from that thing to that thing? Oh, wait, maybe you're a psychopath. Maybe?
Or maybe he is bipolar. You don't know.
Okay, fair enough. I will not use ableist terms anymore.
Maybe his dad is a psychopath.
I mean, he definitely comes from the stock. It's in his blood.
All right. Yeah.
But yes, I do imagine, like, if you're bringing back those two characters, I don't see a reason not to, like show that to its eventual and inevitable end. Mm-hmm. Because, like, I don't feel like the end of those two characters' relationship is going to be anything good.
All right. Well, I agree. I don't think it would end well. So my only real recommendations from this is I really like Vincent Cassell. I think he's a fantastical actor. And I don't think that he gets a chance to shine enough. I feel like a lot of times he's typecast as the scary French guy.
Yes, or like a nincompoop like this film.
Yeah, and so or both in the Oceans movies. So, I would like to recommend two of my favorite films. I mean, they're supposed to be viewed as one film, but one of them is it's the Marine series, which stars Vincent Cassell in the titular role as Jacques Marine. I believe that's how you say his name. Mm. And it's based on a true story about a guy who is basically a real life version of Scarface. Of Al Pacino's Scarface, not the one from the 30s. But in France.
Right.
And, And,
yes, I mean, that is his bread and butter. Like, he has become more of an international star, but, like, he has so many films. He's, like, such a huge star over in France. It's not even funny.
And the first one, I believe, is called Marine the Killer. And the second one, I believe, is called Marine Public Enemy Number One. And they go together. They're both fantastic. You get a chance to see Vincent Cassel not just be a creepy bad guy, but really come to life as a character, rise through the ranks, you know, become this almost larger than life individual. And it's really, really good, and I highly recommend that people check it out. It's also got, you know, the mob connections from Eastern Promises. So there's also that.
Mm-hmm. So you're getting both of those. You're getting someone from the film, and you're also getting the, if you want some more mob action, that's a good one.
The film genre. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I don't know if you have anything you'd want to recommend, but that was my one.
Yes, I have a similar one as well, in which there is an actor, and this is also a mob film. If you want to see Viggo Mortensen in his earlier days as an actor, and this is like late 90s, early 2000s, is a film called American Yakuza. And it is a film that, like, I don't think this came to theaters. Mm-hmm. And if it did, I don't know. It's a very old film. But essentially, he's a character who goes undercover, and as a white man, tries to infiltrate the Yakuza, which is kind of weird. And he gets mixed up between the Yakuza and the Italian mob, and he's trying to, you know, gain the trust and respect of the higher ups in the Yakuza. And he's also an undercover cop that is, you know, like, at, you know, it's not too far off from what his arc is in this film, other than the fact that he's like a complete outsider. Like, he's actually Russian in this film.
Do you own this movie?
I do,
because I swear you have like tried to make me watch this before. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, I was just like, no.
It's like a super low rent film. Like, it's not actually like the hallmarks of, like, you remember how earlier in the podcast we were talking about, like, oh, it doesn't do all, like, Eastern Promises doesn't do, like, the rote thing that all mob films do. Mm-hmm. Like, this was, like, smack dab in the middle of the heyday of mob films. And so it has, like, everything that's, like, generic and cliched from those films. However, like the pure charisma from Viggo Mortensen, and I think, like, there's a difference between me liking actors, like almost a Quentin Tarantino style thing, where he's like, yeah, they're not acting well, but I like what they're doing, you know, that kind of thing. It's like every not, it's not a great film, but it gives me a warm feeling, because like, I just kind of like seeing, it's something that you would catch on TV, like, in the afternoon on a Saturday. Mm-hmm. And, like, it's not a good film, but you can't, like, you're too lazy to tear yourself away from the couch. So it's, like, think about if this is, like, if Eastern Promises is, like, one of those really fancy steaks that you get at a restaurant that you spend a whole bunch of money on. This is like, oh, you decided to go to Arby's instead. Is very good. Sometimes that's what you need, and I will continue to go back and watch that film. It doesn't. He's not in it for very long, but also Robert Forster is in that film, and I honestly like Robert Forster in anything he does. So.
Agreed.
So that's my recommendation. But just keep your expectations at a certain level.
He's one of those actors like John Goodman where I could just watch him read the phone book.
Yeah.
And I would be okay with that. That's a movie I would watch.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I would appreciate it if people would follow me on the Twitter machine. at Argue with Jason, where I am constantly posting things to try to bait people into arguing with me because my wife will not do it anymore. So
I don't blame her.
Donnie, where can people find you?
You can also find me on Twitter at Doggeon the Third, DoggeonThe, the number 3, and the letters R and D. Not the letter N. I've already messed it up. But if you search my name, Donnie Nelson, you'll find me. I have a picture of a Ziploc bag of cash. That is me. That is my stamp. That is my signature. And that's how you know who I am. However, other than that plug, I will recommend to everybody that we are very nearly, the date is upon us, Jason, in which you should be watching Con Air, because it's going to be Con Air Day on the July 14th. Casey Poe is going to meet her daddy for the first time on July 14th. I mean, people keep on wondering, you wonder why I have this facial hair, Jason? You wonder why I have these locks? It's because I will be cosplaying as Cameron Poe on the day, and it'll be a good time. I'm going to be wearing a white tank top and some blue jeans, yes. And I will be, I won't be allowed in any airports, but that's fine. I'm not traveling.
All right. Well, you can also follow the show on Twitter. You can follow the show on Facebook, on Instagram, the Outer Frame Podcast, I think, on Instagram. I try to do a pretty decent job of updating the Facebook, but I try to get more involved doing that sort of thing. I would like to quickly thank Preston Alexander for doing our artworks, and you can find him online at Pralix. And that would be on Instagram, Twitch, and Twitter. You can also look for music by Dr. Tub Thumper, who did our intro music, and send it to us, because we don't know of any other music that he's released under that name and would love to hear it. I would also like to thank Caitlin Industries for editing the show. And I think that's about all of the stuff I have that I normally say, other than the fact that you have not watched Source Code, I have not watched Alpha. Someday soon, we will be watching those movies. Well, I hope. In
Please
your
be
case,
very scared for that day.
In your case, at least. It's one of the signs of the coming apocalypse. All right. I got nothing else to say other than go watch movies.
Go watch movies.
Go watch movies. All right.
Yeah, go watch movies.
Thank you so much for listening. Goodbye.
Okay, bye.